you. Preface it by a few facts here on the Pew Research Center, if you don't know who we are, that we are a nonprofit fact tank. So we also do not take a political view. We're very much non-ideological, nonpartisan in the work that we do, which is sort of crucial to who we are and how we do our research. And I'm going to just preface how we got into doing this research that looked particularly at Western Europe. And it came from trends that we were seeing in the U.S. Most of the research in our past has been primarily focused on the U.S. And one of the things that we saw following the 2016 election, which was quite a shakeup in our country, was a very, very strong divides emerging, just dramatic divides in 1 year's time between the political left and the political right in the U.S. And if you look at just a preface of these slides, and I'll come circle back through these in just a few minutes, but you can see these numbers here, the first ones are 2016, January, February of 2016, and you can see in a question, for example, of what we'd call the watchdog role, which is the job of the press to sort of keep an eye on political leaders because it can keep them from doing things they shouldn't do, or they shouldn't keep an eye on them because it gets in the way of doing their job. Strong support, historically, Democrats and Republicans in agreement here, in the early part of 2016, to a 47 percentage point gap a year later in 2017, and with a gap just about as wide here in the early part of 2018. So even where there were some divides that existed prior, much more so over just a year's time and continuing on through today. And so part of what that drove was a question of whether we are going to see these same types of political divides, particularly on the left and the right, in other countries, and particularly in Europe, as we were starting to see things that were emerging during the elections in Britain and in France and in Germany then. So we launched into this study of 8 Western European countries, one of which was the UK. And this was done close to a year ago now, not quite. So you can also get a sense of how things may even have changed a bit and trends emerged since this survey was done. And so one of the things that we asked about was the attitudes towards news media, so both usage and in attitudes. And you can see here we ask a question about the value that the news media play, being very important to society, and then a question about trust. And what you can see in general is that overall, in most of these countries, people tend to support the role of the news media. Trust level, however, tends to go quite down when you get to overall trust. And when we look at where the UK falls, they fall at the lower end when you ask most of these attitudinal questions in general. And one of the things we saw across the board was that for the most part, the 3 most southern countries, France, Italy, and Spain, that were studied here, tended to have primarily much more negative attitudes and more fragmentation of the news media. And the UK, and then the northern, more concentration around particular outlets and better attitudes. But the UK is actually divided in many of the cases, where the attitudes tend to be worse towards the news media, more negative towards the news media. But the UK still has a lot of sharing of individual sources for news. And so you see those numbers as we go through these. And then one of the other elements we wanted to look at, in addition to the left-right divide that may or may not exist in these countries, was how these views and attitudes around populism, the dynamics of populism, may have an impact in these attitudes and news usage as well. And what we did was we took 2 questions in particular that across most countries, they are at sort of what is the core of populism ideals, which is the anti-elitist and sort of pro-ordinary person kind of view. So it's not asking individuals, do you call yourself a populist, or trying to encompass all of the populism dynamics, but what can be consistently considered a part of sort of that core of the populism ideals across countries. And you can see here, the UK actually sort of sits in the middle with a decent percentage, 36%, that said that espoused a populist view for both of these 2 questions, and then 21% that had the non-populist way of seeing both of these questions, and with 43% in the middle there. And so when you look at the dynamics, what we see is this is the question of trust in the news media. And you can see in all eight countries very strong divides along those who espouse those populism ideals versus those who don't. So the populist ideals, the two yeses are here on the darker color, and the orange is there on the right. And you can see the difference in the UK here with 17 points, with the greatest difference being Germany at 31 points there. When you look at it by left-right, and this was one of the things that was really a striking finding of this study, there's very little, if any, divide politically when it comes to the attitudes about the news media. And Spain still has some, Sweden and Germany both have some, but much smaller than the differences you see around those populism ideals. And this is just showing a little bit, because I do get questions a lot about party favorability. So if you look at this according to, you know, by the parties somebody said they favor, you can see that there's some difference, but the difference isn't as striking either as when you look at it around populism ideals. And to understand this question, people could say yes to all three of these, no to all three of these in terms of favorability, or pick one of them. And this is just showing it again. This is the back to the question about the importance of the role of the media to society. So this is showing you again the gaps you see around the populism, non-populism ideals, and the fact that you, in most cases, don't see them nearly as much, if at all, when it comes to left-right. So then we ask about individual outlets in each country and wanted to get a sense of the trust of individual levels of outlets. And one of the things we saw, and I can preface this by saying for each country, we chose, selected eight outlets to ask people about specifically. And we do have a separate question where we ask people their main news source, which I'll show you some data on later. It was not easy to choose eight outlets. There are many, many more that are not in this mix. And Charlie was among our advisors that we asked to sort of help us weigh in. We use a lot of factors in picking. And so it's to try to get a mix and also do a representation of the different media that are here. But you can see in all of the countries, the Spain was the only country where the major public media outlet was not clearly ranked first in trust. It was tied for first with another outlet. But in all these countries, the public news media outlets by far, other than Spain, the most highly trusted. And that's very different than in the U.S. And again, you also see here that those are, this is looking at those with the populism ideals and those who don't in terms of the trust they have for different outlets. And we do see for several of these that when you get to the left, right, there are some divides here in the UK, particularly The Guardian, The Huffington Post, and The Daily Mail. But again, with the populism ideals really showing strong divides there. And one of the other things we did in this study that I thought was fascinating, it was the first time we had done it, we have not done the same thing in the U.S., was we asked about, so we looked first at the audience makeup, okay? So when we talk about sort of where does a outlet fall politically, we always talk about it according to their audience makeup. So we don't say the outlet is such, we would say the makeup of the audience is X. And if you look at the user base here, these are people say that they use these outlets regularly. You can see on a political spectrum of 0 to 6, with 0 being the far left, 6 being the far right, the way people identify themselves on a political spectrum, they all pretty much fall in the middle. That's the way the audience clusters. So for here, you can see this is all 8 of those individual outlets, and they're all kind of clustering towards the middle. But then we ask people who have heard of the outlet, so this is more than users, people who have heard of it, what they think the ideological orientation of the outlet is. And you can see in all these countries, visually, you can just see how that they come further apart down the line. So people tend to place outlets further away ideologically, further down one side or the other ideologically than what their audience makeup actually is. And when we look at this further, what we see here is that when you look at how where users place them, users tend to place an outlet that they use closer to themselves politically. So if these are users on the left, and you're looking at the BBC, right, they're putting it, the usage here. Users on the right who go to the BBC are pulling it, they're placing it further to the right politically. So we tend to see outlets and consider them to be like ourselves politically when we use them. Now, the numbers weren't quite as clear and consistent when you look at non-users. They do tend to sort of put them more in the opposite direction than themselves, but it wasn't quite as clear. You can see that, also see it very well here with The Guardian. Users on the left are pulling it way over to the left, and the right pushes over there. And this was something we saw more so in some countries than others, but in the UK, five of the eight all got significantly pulled one way or the other. The two tabloids didn't have enough users on both sides for us to feel confident about those numbers, so we didn't include them in this. So there was really only one, only Sky, I think, that was the one that wasn't pulled. And you can see, yeah, Sky and ITV, both of those, actually. So then if we look at where Western Europeans go for news, and the UK is interesting here, too. So this is asking people about platforms that they use, at least daily. And again, you could answer yes to all of them or no to all of them. And you can see that the UK is less dependent upon TV than most of these eight Western European countries are. So it's actually a smaller portion, even though it's still primary, it's pretty much tied now with the web, which is really something that's a pretty substantial finding when you think about the orientation of news audiences and news consumers and how they're getting their news today. And also, radio is pretty strong in most of these countries as a way of listening. And we did find that the UK was also had fewer people that use multiple platforms. So it actually had the most people, at 26% I think it was, that used three or four of these four platforms, and the greatest and the smallest percentage that used, the smallest percentage that used three or four, and the greatest percentage that used just one, which is 26%. So less cross-platform usage. And then this is looking at main news source. So this is where it's a straight open end, and we just enter in what it is people said. Now, I will say that we do put brands together, so BBC is going to represent all of the different BBC types of publications and outlets that people listed. So it does go by brand. Oftentimes, it's too hard to differentiate within a brand in terms of what people mean. But certainly, the UK ranks highest in terms of that concentration and that sharing of a single news source. And that's one of the things that we've seen in the US is a real segmentation of the news sources and the media that people are going to. And the UK certainly stands apart in having more people that are relying on the BBC. Social media, and the UK sort of falls in the middle here. You have most people that are getting at least some news, but it's not extremely high. And you think about, even though that online number is high, the social media number is not as high, relatively, as where the UK sits for online. And then this just shows a percentage. And actually, here the UK sort of stands out, too, with a higher percentage, 21. Charlie, I was wrong before. That get at least some news on Twitter. And that's a higher portion than what we're seeing in most of these. In fact, double most, except for Spain. But Facebook's still, by far, dominant across the board, and same in the U.S. And one of the other things we asked about, we asked this question a little bit differently than we've done it in the past, and the findings were quite interesting. So we asked people whether the sources that they see in social media are ones that they tend to be familiar with or not familiar with. And so that's getting at the sense of, are people exposed to different types of news, or their same basic news outlets in social media. But then we added a third option, which is that I don't really pay attention to sources. And we had very substantial percentages in most countries saying that they don't pay attention to sources. And if you combine that with people saying they're ones they're not familiar with, and in some of these countries, you're at over a third, up to 40% of people or so that are saying that they don't really know these sources that they're getting news from. And that corresponds to some other research that we've done where we ask people, if they had gotten news in the last 2 hours. We did it twice a day over the course of a week and asked people if they had gotten news online in the last 2 hours. And then if they did, we asked them if they filed a link. And if they did, we asked them if they could name the source of that news. And if they had gotten there through social media, a social media link, or through an email that that came to them from a friend or a family, they were half as likely to be able to name that source as if it came directly to them from the news organization, either through an alert or through an email from a news organization. So that one-step removal already seems to leave us less able to remember the sources. And then if you tack on to that, people not really paying attention to those sources to begin with. And there can be a real issue with just awareness of where that news and information is coming from when we're in the social media space. So then now I'll just tie it sort of quickly back into some of what we're seeing in the U.S. and, you know, a little bit more just around sort of the environment of misinformation. So when you think about those platform numbers that I was just showing you a few minutes ago, you can see in the U.S., I mean, we've always been very much a country where television has had the widest reach by far, and particularly local television in the U.S. Is really where a lot of these numbers are coming from. But again, since 2016, a real precipitous decline in TV, continued rise in the web. And so we're now at a point in the U.S. where we're within sort of 6 percentage points, 7 percentage points, back to 8 in 2018, but single digits between online and TV, which is a substantial shift. Radio is holding its own. Print is not. At the same time, even though so many people are online, and within those online numbers, we have about two-thirds of the population that are getting some of their news through social media. Facebook, again, is by far the most dominant. YouTube has the second widest reach for news in the U.S. now at about a quarter. And then Twitter comes third. But at the same time, when we ask people about what they think of the news they come across in social media, we see a lot of attitudes that might raise question. So you'd see here that you have the largest portion, 57%, that say that they expect the news that they see in social media to mostly be inaccurate rather than accurate. We ask them if it helps them better understand events. And these are social media news consumers, so these are just asked of people who actually say they get news on social media. Whether it didn't make much difference or whether it made them more informed about current events. Only 15% say getting that news through social media leaves them more informed about current events. For the most part, it either doesn't do anything or it makes them confused. And when we ask trust numbers in the U.S., now this, again, I've done these 3 years in a row, because I kept wanting to re-ask the social media question because the first year I didn't know if I trusted it. But you see, nothing's super high, but if you look at these a lot of trust numbers, you have local news organizations sit at the top in the U.S. a little bit. They're the highest, at about a quarter, that say they trust them a lot. And then you're down to about 20% national news media. You then ask about the news that I get through friends and family, because I wanted to make sure we were bringing that into the mix, because that's a real legitimate source today. Falls a little bit more, another 5 percentage point decline. Then you drop to low single digits when you ask about trust in social media. And that has remained consistent, as you can see, very consistent over 3 years. But why do people go there? Convenience. Right? It's so convenient. It's so easy. It's so easy to get news. You don't have to look for it. It comes to you. It's there waiting for you when you check in, whatever time of day that is, wherever you are, and whatever type of device. This was a open-end write-in. What is it that you like most about social media? Convenience. We did the open-end write-in for what you like least, and that was inaccuracy again. So within this, within this dynamic of having 9 in 10 adults getting some of their news through the web, a lot of that being through social media, there being a wide mix of different types of content producers that now want to reach those 9 in 10 adults that are in that space, either to make money, to create an ad or an image, or to create a political impact in some form. So you have all this content coming at people. You have most people there. And you have a very political system that carries a lot of animosity, a kind that we have not witnessed in our recent decades in the past. And this is asking people of one party how they feel about the other party. And so we're beyond, I disagree with them, I have different kinds of ideas. I mean, this is anger. This is being afraid. And when you ask people, so we have 70% of highly politically engaged Democrats saying they're afraid of Republicans. 62% of those on the other side, highly politically engaged Republicans, saying that are Democrats. So we have more people that are fitting into those extremes politically, and a much higher negative and sort of aggressively negative attitudes towards the other party. So when you think about how the level of openness for the kinds of sources that you're going to come across, and then this is where, if you think back to that BBC number and some of these other numbers in the UK and elsewhere in Europe, we have tremendous fragmentation. And this is going back to the 2016 election, but it's a really good example, I think, and we're seeing the same dynamics at play today. So these are people that said they either voted for Trump or voted for Clinton. And you can just look at the difference. Now, the main news source was just, like, dramatically different. But this is just, did you regularly get election news from any of these sources? And you can see how much divide on both sides of the political aisle there is. And then, finally, we do ask people a number of questions about misinformation in particular in the U.S., and what we see is strong agreement that it's causing confusion about the basic facts of what's happening. We also have a follow-up where we ask about sort of misinformation and made-up news, and clearly people feel like they're seeing a lot more misinformation than they're seeing what's actually wholly made-up news. And this is agreement across political parties, so all these other areas where there's divide, not here politically. People are agreeing on this. So we then wanted to do but dig into the question of where does this leave people in terms of their capability of parsing through this information online? When you sort of roll up all these factors that I was just sharing with you, where does that leave us in being able to sort out what's a factual statement and what's an opinion? So we did a study earlier this year that showed people a number of different statements. We had two different sets, and this data is coming from the first set of five factual statements, five opinions that were news-based. Not real from any news organization, but based on real stuff. And asked people to label them as a factual statement or an opinion. And what we found was that only about a quarter of people were able to label all the factual statements correctly, and only about a third could do so for the opinion statements. Now, we did have most that could name half of them, at least half of them, right? But that's sort of chance, like it's one or two, so it's not really that good. And a number that got two or fewer wrong, right? So the overall capability is not very strong in being able to identify these. But what was more striking was when we looked at different sort of characteristics of individuals that leave one better or less able to label these correctly. And some of the factors that had a huge, very large level of impact was one's political awareness. And these were all indexes we created off of a number of questions that we asked people. So the level of political awareness, the level of digital savviness, how comfortable one is in the digital space, the trust in news, and less so was actually news interest. A little bit of difference, but not much. People who were at the high end of all of these, high political awareness, high digital savviness, a lot of trust in the news media, were able to identify these much, much better, had much stronger ability than those at the lower ends. And there's a lot of people that fall into these lower ends of the spectrum too. But then one of the other challenges that faces, particularly in the U.S., and this is a place where the U.S. is a little bit different than Europe, is even if the public is in agreement that there's an issue, that misinformation is causing a problem, it's leaving people confused, that there is very strong support for the freedom to access and publish information. And that is just sort of at the heart of so much of the U.S., that if you ask people that knowing this current situation, would you prefer the U.S. government take steps to control misinformation, even if it means it might limit some freedoms to access or publish information? Or would you prefer to be sure to protect those freedoms, even if it means some misinformation will be in that mix? Preference, 6 and 10, 58%, would prefer to keep that misinformation out there as long as the freedom to publish and access information remains. A little bit more willingness on the part of technology companies taking steps, but fairly well divided there in terms of what people would go with. And you can see here that there's pretty strong consensus among both Democrats and Republicans against the government taking actions. And Democrats a little bit more willing for technology companies to do so. And that's it.
Just quick before I go to the people in the audience, obviously we've had a lot of conversations around this over the time you've been doing it, and just now that it's published. I wondered, you referred to the comparison between the US and Europe. It's a double part question. What do you think, how useful was that comparison between the US and Europe? What you just kind of learned from it? But also, when you look at Europe, you can see some of the trends or results are quite common. You know, for example, the grouping on perceptions of news brands. But some of them are kind of wildly different around trust, for example, and usage. You know, UK, Italy were quite outliers on some things strongly. So yeah, the comparison bit, and then
within the European countries, I think I would, looking back, the comparison was absolutely worthwhile. I think we learned a lot about some of the broad trends that do seem to cut across countries, but that there is a fundamental, a lot of that's in a general agreement about the role that the news media play, but that there's just some fundamental differences in the structure of the news media and the history of the news media. For example, one of the things we wanted to do was look at, say, niche digital, these digital natives. Well, they just don't have the same sort of reach in Europe yet that we've seen in the U.S. And so there was certainly learning on our part about sort of what exists and doesn't exist. But it also taught about, I think, not assuming another country is in the same place that you are. And the left-right dynamics, I think, were fascinating. And just the fact that there's not that ideological pull when it comes to attitudes towards the news media. And what we saw more, this was from actually a 38-country study that we did. And what you saw was that, in general, support and trust in the news media corresponded very closely in almost all these countries with trust in the government. And the U.S. was the opposite. And so it's just flipped. And it had the largest gap politically, and it was a flip reverse of the two. So just some real differences that exist that's helpful for us all to understand. And then within Europe, I think each country has unique dynamics, and we sort of have a fact sheet out on each country that can really go into the unique dynamics. We certainly saw, for the most part, where the three southern had sort of the more negative and more fragmentation, that the fragmentation existed both in both political realms. And then the northern tended to sort of have better attitudes, with the UK splitting itself in terms of where it went. So differences in the range of media, sort of the number of different outlets people tended to sort of to go to. But there was definitely that overall trend between the north and the south that for the most part stood up.
Yeah. Okay. Not the food and the weather.
Yeah.
Too far away. Just there's...
Yeah, Steve Schiffer, City University. Great talk, really interesting data. Just a couple of observations or follow-ups on that. First of all, on this left-right split that you're not getting. I wonder if that's partly a function of the way we're having a kind of different fragmentation of European political parties. So if you ask, you know, people who support AFD or the Swedish Democrats what their views of the media are, that's where you may well get that really big split rather than the traditional left-right party. So that might be something to think about in future versions. I think the north-south point is really significant in terms of both media systems and attitudes. And I've done some work with some colleagues on attitudes toward austerity in the media, how the media is covering it, which I think is a good sort of, you know, also, you know, a bit of a placeholder for this idea of alienation or not. And there's a very striking difference between the sort of the way the media in the South covered austerity and sort of criticized it and the way it was accepted. I mean, but in a pan-European way accepted. So I think that's another interesting dynamic in terms of the policy side. The third thing I just want to say is about trust. And I mean, I mean the UK is kind of unusually unique in that the BBC has so much trust and has maintained that over time. And that is, there's a sort of definite media system there. But I thought it was your point about the relationship between trust in media and trust in government, I think is a really interesting one. Because going back, I mean, one of your questions is really the Verba question, isn't it? Sort of, do you, you know, do politicians work for you? Now, in Britain, actually, there's been a long-term decline in that question from the 70s to 80s. It preceded the change in trust in the media, which kind of really picked up in the 2000s. So the idea they're correlated in a sense now. I mean, they are linked, but I think the dynamics of those changes. And then we have trust in bankers or corporations, which again suddenly crashed in 2008. So they're, although they're correlated, I think the dynamics of how trust is changing, whether we're seeing a very general across the board decline, or whether it's just the media, is a really interesting thing to compare and contrast.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I think going back to the point on the party support, one of the differences too with Europe is the multi-party system than the U.S., right? And so one of the things, because we did ask party favorability, and partly because people could favor multiple parties, and I think we had in some countries, you know, up to 30% that favored three parties, you know, or at least two parties. So actually, in along that question, lining these numbers up, we did not see as big of a difference. But it's, I think it's because there's overlap of individuals in these groups, and maybe if it was the voting, if you went by how people voted, which we did not have the data on to correlate, one might see greater differences there. Yeah, yeah, that's interesting. I did also learn a lot. I learned a lot from doing the research. I always do, but this was really fascinating. I learned a ton about other country dynamics, but certainly the just sort of the differences politically when you're working with a multi-party system historically is something that we had to really think about in how we were evaluating this data. Yeah.
I have a follow-up from Charlie's question, actually. So your slide...
You just say
I'm Sarah Benet Weiser. I'm the head of the department here at and thank you for this. It's really super depressing.
we'll have a glass of wine together.
I was wondering about the slide that you had with the European countries, the Western European countries that you did the survey on. All of them had, as you pointed out, a much, much more significant percentage of people who trusted in the public news media.
Yes.
Right? And then,
Spain, where it was tied.
And then you mentioned that this is different from the U.S. So in the U.S., as you know, even though there is a public broadcasting system, it hasn't been historically any kind of bastion for news like the BBC, anything close to that. And so I'm wondering about ownership here and corporate ownership and how that might play into ideas of partisanship or trust since you know, it's hard to compare them.
Well, it's absolutely true. And that's why, like, you don't see in these slides, I don't have the U.S. up there because it's not an exact comparison, right? I can talk about U.S. dynamics and how they're sort of similar or not similar to what we're seeing here, but you can't put them side by side in a chart because they're just different. But absolutely. And it's not just the being a bastion of news. There's a fundamental distrust, to use that number again, of government funding of things like that. And so in the U.S., like when you asked people, particularly news organizations, at least up until recently, they're in kind of in dire straits now, so I'm not sure what their answer would be at this point. But if they would consider funding from the government, that was like the one that was always absolutely a huge no. And in the public sense, funding from the government would be a bad thing, or corporate influence over, you know, any kind of influence over what that news would be. And so there's certainly a skepticism that comes with any sense of government funding around that. And it also is, there's greater skepticism from the right side, the conservative Republican side, also because of the view that the government shouldn't be involved in this part of life. They should just let things go, and so it goes to the free market system. So there's certainly a difference there, and it just doesn't have the historical. But we did ask a question that was, do you have more trust? Would you trust a publicly held news organization more, or a privately held one? And for all these countries, publicly held would be more trusted than privately.
Sandy Livingstone from the department. A comment and then a question. So I think we should just clarify here that there's been an enormous amount of regulatory and structural effort to separate the BBC from the government.
Mm-hmm.
So this
mm-hmm.
is not government
yes.
funding
yes.
handed
right.
out to dictate the government's message, as it were, to the public. These are completely. You
yes.
Can argue
yes.
about it,
yes.
But it's
right.
Not,
right.
It's,
right.
It's a real separate.
Yes, I was not suggesting
yeah.
otherwise. It's
government
it's more the concept of the any kind of connection in the U.S.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
yeah.
So my question, thinking about our Truth, Trust, and Technology Commission. So one of the things we're thinking about is, so which is the trusted organization that can fix some of the problems of fake news, distrust, misinformation, and so on. So. It seems like in the US there is more trust for the technology companies to sort this out rather than the government. And in Europe you're saying there's more trust in governments than in the tech companies, or I'm not quite sure where. But where do you see the trust actually, you know, what do people trust? Who could be trusted to sort things out there?
We'll have to ask that question on the next survey. However, that would be a great open end to have somebody code for us. What I would say, though, on that prior question was not a question of trust, and I would be careful about interpreting it as that, because it's a question about maybe more who is it okay for, not. It's not, do I trust technology companies to do the right thing? That's not what it was asking. It was putting a, you know, you have a choice of this or that. So it's sort of forcing people to make a choice. And there's a little more willingness for the company that owns the space to put out some rules on it, I think, than the government to put rules on the company and potentially information. That's kind of where the gist of it is. So I'm not sure. And I don't know if I'm not sure that the data in Europe that we had could really speak to who the public would trust to address misinformation. It was interesting because when we did focus groups prior to this survey, we did them in three countries, one of which was the UK. And we were going to have misinformation be at least a fair amount of this survey. And we did, I think, four different folk, or eight in each country. I'm going to forget. But in any event, several. Nobody thought misinformation was a problem. This was a year ago that we did the focus groups. So I was like, well, we can't force it. And if we have everybody saying it's not a problem, then the data come out. We knew there was going to be a lag, because that's the way international survey work has to be done. So I don't know that I would say our data can speak to where the public sits on that in Europe. I think I would want to go at that another way.
More research,
absolutely. I'm all for that. Yes, I'd be happy to. Happy to. Yeah.
Robin Mansell from here. Did you mention the private sector and the companies and government? Did you ask questions about the role of the judiciary?
We did not. That's a great question. I'm not sure. I mean, I know that that there are some EU commissions that are, you know, I met with the British Commission that was out in the U.S., House of Commons that was out. But I don't know that the public has really had them in mind, at least not in the U.S., and we did not ask in Europe, no. But I think that's a good question. The government in general would include the judiciary in the U.S. I mean, it's a part of the U.S. government in as a branch, but not directly. No, it's a good question. Yeah. Yeah, I wish I had that slide here. We did in the 38 country survey that we did a little bit earlier, it was a few months before this one, we did ask about not individual outlets, but we asked individual, and we asked if sort of different expectations of the news media, and the question that received the strongest consistency across all these countries was that the news media should not ever have a political view, and the rating, the performance rating, where the news media scored the worst across these countries was in doing that job, is being politically neutral when covering events and issues. Well, this was it. So I was saying this was news media in general. So 38 countries, we cannot ask about specific outlets. So I don't have individual data on that. We did ask performance questions in general on this questionnaire also, but not individual outlets. Only trust. Yeah. We do find trust correlates to people's sense of bias, though, that tends to be a very close correlation.
Yeah, following on from that, really, Ross Taylor, I noticed you saw very similar levels of trust in the BBC on both left and right, mm-hmm. which was very interesting for me because one of the perceptions which I think people have, possibly through a lot of use of Twitter, is that there is a turn on the left against the BBC, also to some extent from anti-Brexit campaigners, but also from the left. Now, I'm wondering whether that is due to maybe there's a time lag in your research or whether it is actually the case that trust is holding up, and what we see on Twitter is a bit of a signal noise thing, and it's really representative of a very small proportion of
yeah.
the population. Because, you know, we have seen demos outside the BBC, it hasn't been that, to that extent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say, in general, most of these attitudinal measures tend to change, you know, rather slowly. So I wouldn't think there'd be a huge, although that's part of what we saw in the U.S. in just 1 year's time, which was what was so striking, was to see that huge shift in just a year. So I don't know that there's a lag. And we did see the same when you looked at those who held the populist views versus those who didn't, that even though there was a difference, it was majorities of both. And so it was consistent with in both of those political dynamic in those measures. So I don't think... I think it's more the fact that there are voices, perhaps, that are being heard through Twitter or other social media. If you've got only 21% of the UK population that's getting any news on that, a fraction that's actually voicing anything on that, that there's probably a real strong something that's being heard that may not represent the whole of the population there.
Alison Preston from Ofcom, the UK media regulator, and I was just wondering about breaking down the UK result particularly by socioeconomic group, and whether, you know, particularly around schools around populism and so on,
mm-hmm.
whether there is differential there, and also perhaps with age as well.
That would be, I do have the age break on the populism, and I can say that certainly the 50 plus are less likely to fall into having the dynamic of holding both of those populism views. Both the 18 to 29 and the 30 to 49, I believe, were fairly equal in the percentages, which was in the 40s%. I have that table. I can pull up in a second for you. Socioeconomic would be really interesting. I have that data available. I don't have it handy, but I'd be happy to run it and shoot a table over to you if I can get your email after. Yeah.
I looked at your data on trusting government across European countries and just looked at it compared to trust in news media, and it was a perfect correlation. It's 0.96 or something like that. Obviously, correlation's not causation, so we can't say low trust in news media leads to low trust in government, but I wonder if you have any thoughts on that relationship between the two.
Yeah, it's very strong. And there there does tend to be, it sort of speaks to the trust in institutional authority. And that's part of what is behind this dynamic of anti-elitism, too, is just that questioning of authority, of institutional power, or the positive role that institutions bring to us, and that the lack, and even though, like in the U.S., we have about a number of different institutions generally when it comes to trust, or do they generally have a negative or positive influence on the country, any way you ask it. There are some that stand aside, like the military, post office still ranks pretty high. But for the most part, there's a pretty strong correlation where the numbers are falling. The news media tends to be at quite the lower end of that, but there is certainly a strong correlation between the two.
I find no correlation between trust in military and news media or government, and again between banks, et cetera. But between news media and government, it was
a
really strong correlation.
Yes, and a few other institutions as well. There are some of those other sort of higher overarching institutions. Yeah, absolutely so.
Sorry, whenever you want
to.
Well, we'll come back to
you
next.
I'm Mary
Deshevsky,
and I come at this
from the
other
Mary,
side of the
fence. Sorry, I'm sorry. I'm very bad at this. I
throw
a big stick.
Hi, Nicole, a postgraduate student at the Grad Department. On your note of factual versus opinion statements, and you're mentioning that the, say, indexes are more around individual savviness, political awareness. I'm just curious if there's anything that differentiates both groups, for example, with one group that is missing, like the differentiation would be that they were getting more than used through social media platforms such as Twitter, so they cannot really distinguish between both, or is it kind of contrasting?
If I understand your question correctly, I'll give two different answers. One is that each of those comprised 100% of the survey group, so there were folks in the middle. So there's the high end, the low, high politically aware, low politically aware, and the folks that are in the middle. And for all those groups, the folks in the middle tended to fall in the middle. So it does cover everybody, if that's part of what you're asking. And then if you're asking how much overlap there is among the groups, I think it was only, in one case, 20% of one group overlapped with another, and that was the highest. So they were pretty separate groups. One of the things that does tend to correspond highly to high levels of each of these is education. We did run controls for that to pretty strong degrees and found that these differences, education also shows some difference, but these differences hold even if you control for education. And that data is in the report in some detailed index if you wanted it.
Hi, Franco from the London School of Economics, doing my PhD in this department. So I just wanted to ask you one question about, so we've talked about regulation and kind of self-regulation and kind of attitudes in favor and in favor of regulation and against. I'm wondering whether you've done any sort of research into the factors kind of potentially explaining this kind of attitude, and I'm specifically wondering whether, for example, political awareness and digital savviness, right, which I see as an expression respectively of political literacy, digital literacy, might somehow explain to some extent the level of trust in either the government or tech corporations doing something about this, because I'm wondering whether, for example, potential low levels of digital literacy and or political literacy might somehow be an indication of the fact that people are not so much inclined to believe that there should be regulation and the freedom for speech should be preserved no matter what.
That's a really interesting question. They were from two different surveys, so I couldn't actually put those numbers together to look at them. I do know that in the question of government action or not, that the even across education, it held, you know, that the not wanting government to take action held across education and income. There were some differences by gender, but still majorities that fell, you know, on the side of not taking action. So for those areas who didn't see it, but it would be fascinating to run. I just, unfortunately, they were from two separate data sets, so I couldn't put them in together. But that's a really good question. Yeah, and it I mean, in some cases, some of that may be, I don't know, actually. I don't know that you'd find that correlation, to be perfectly honest, because the way many, at least in the U.S., the way people think about government action, it just, I believe a lot of that would cut across your digital savviness and even how politically aware you are in political dynamics, because it's just a deep-rooted, foundational way of thinking about how things should function and flow in the U.S. But it's a good question.
To see that not so many people seem to be dependent on the online, like as opposed to other countries, and there's still so many, but for example, would rely on television.
Yeah.
It was something that I was particularly struck by.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Yeah, please.
Hi, my name is Katerina. I'm a PhD student at the government department here at LSE. I also have a question about the opinion versus factual 5-point measure that you did, and I wondered if you also ran your analyses by left-right divide or by level of partisanship. So basically I'm interested in would moderate versus extreme partisans have different media literacy scores. Did you find any?
Yeah, that's a great question. We didn't do it along extreme, but we did do it look at party ideology, so Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, and we found that in general the folks on the left, Democrats did a little bit better than Republicans did, which is our conservative group in the U.S. However, the bigger thing we saw was that for both parties, there was a tendency to what they got wrong was in order to support their party's way of viewing a statement. So for a statement that was incorrectly labeled an opinion when it was actually factual, those tended to be things that those in their party system disagreed with. And in the opinion, in things that were opinions that were labeled as factual incorrectly for both parties, they tended to be things that their party agreed with. And so there's a tendency to call something a fact if it's in your political ideology and to call it an opinion if it's not. Even though this question starts with, regardless of whether you agree with this or not, so there certainly was a tendency in both sides. That was the biggest finding along the political spectrum that really came out of it.
Is that in your report?
It is, yeah.
Okay.
That's in the report.
Majority doesn't actually want more controls, that they think having misinformation is the price worth paying for freedom of the media. I think that's a good thing. I think it's good that in your findings they showed that to an extent education can actually make a difference in how people distinguish between what's trustworthy and what isn't. The fact that so many people intrinsically distrust the social media, I think that's not a bad attitude to start out with. So, you know, I don't find it too depressing. I just mention a couple of things. I think the British press, the British media, I think, is completely unique. I mean, I know we say, you know, everybody says that their media are unique, but in terms of the fact that the press is blatantly politicized, nobody even pretends to be impartial in the press. It's not even considered a virtue for the press.
whereas in America and in a lot of European countries, actually impartiality is considered a virtue,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's in the press or the broadcast media.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's fascinating. And so I have two thoughts, but on thoughts on two separate points. One is that on the political nature of the news media or not, that's why in this 38th country, it was so fascinating to see, including the countries in Europe, where there was strong consensus that the news media should not hold a political view. And to me, that was surprising in some forms to see that. So it was striking that there is still, if you're just asking the public, even if they say the news media have a view, the sense is there isn't some consensus that there shouldn't be. And then the social media point, I think, is very interesting. And, one of the things I often share when I'm talking about some of the data around social media in particular is that it does show that there, it doesn't mean people aren't getting news there, right? They are. And they're going to continue to. But there is a certain level of awareness, at least among, the general population. And there's going to be parts of the population that either want to agree or don't want to agree or believe what they see or don't believe what they see. But there is a level of awareness that there's something different in this stream, and one should have a little higher level of caution and a little higher level of question from friends and family than from news media also. So to me, it was significant to see that kind of stepladder down, if you will, from news media down to social media. And again, it doesn't mean that people aren't going to get news there, but there is sort of a difference in attitudinally that cuts across a lot of different ways we've asked the question.
I wanted to ask a quick point on that one, really. How did you interpret the bit, which I think is fascinating, the bit about people where it was news brands they were less familiar with that they thought were more, I suppose, partisan or biased?
In that, so the way that question worked was if you hadn't heard of it, so we ask sort of, do you use it? Have you heard of it? Do you use it? Or have you not heard of it, right? And so if you didn't hear it, you didn't get to rate them. You didn't get to place them if you hadn't heard of them. And so if you look back, if I can go back to that slide, there are a number. In fact, the Huffington Post is pretty substantial. I think it's this country. Where there's, where there's a number that you have 33% that haven't heard of the Huffington Post here. So that's pretty, that's one of those, when I was saying the digital natives just aren't in the same place as where they are, at least in the U.S. And so they don't get to, I always think it's important to show these numbers because, this is what adds up to 100%, not these folks. So there's still a number that aren't weighing in on some of those. We've done it. And so the same way we've done it's even.
It's quite good trust ratio.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, trust ratio. Yeah, you want to look at the balance here between the dark and the light. More than the actual numbers, because this is just showing that fewer people are weighing in. We had sort of something with BuzzFeed similar in the U.S. a few years back, where there were so many, such a large percentage that hadn't heard of it, to weigh in, that you really needed to factor that into the consideration. But no, even though some of these there's also a substantial number in that gray box for many of these, that people said they didn't think they could rate it. And which actually was, again, not a bad sign for the public to say, I don't really know, right? So you had a large portion that probably aren't users that have heard of these sites that said, I don't know, I can't really say. And so this is among people that said, that have heard of it and felt like they could give an answer.
But moving on a few slides, mm-hmm. to the one where you showed
did I go backwards?
No,
sorry.
The one that shows people's perception of the
this
news,
one.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is, or this one, which one did you
the
make?
Next one, the one, that
one. This one?
No, that one.
Yes, so this is people who have heard of it, okay? And this would be what their audience makeup is, and this is anybody who heard of it could place the outlet. And it speaks to the public sense that the news media are more politically oriented, at least, than their audience actually is.
Yeah.
So that the news media overall, I mean, this is across the board here, for the most part. There's one country was less so. Germany was sort of less movement. But still, there was, in general, people see the news media is more politically oriented than what their audience makeup actually shows it to be. And that is was a pretty strong dynamic.
And it seems more to the right than the left, if looking at this, that it's more biased to the right, according
for the most part, yeah. Yep. Moving more to the right. There are some that get pulled. I think Netherlands had some that got pulled more left in France. But yeah, generally it's more in the positive number direction than negative. Yeah. Yeah, but then the second half, which is that the polls tend to be in one's own political, towards one's own political way of thinking is the other, among users is the other interesting
thing.
Does
that somehow have a relationship, not causational, but just some kind of relationship with the idea of, call it polarization?
Yeah.
And trust.
I'd say certainly trust, yeah.
In the sense of it kind of, it's always like slightly fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
You think the one you don't quite like must be really off the scale.
Off, yeah. I think that's right. And I think it's going in with a sense of skepticism, a sense that there's a political orientation to it.
Yeah.
And again, this isn't a content evaluation here of their content. This is their audience. But still, that there's more of a political orientation. And what we see, and part of what we're trying to do in some of our other research is dig deeper into that, what does trust mean? You know, what do people mean by trust? And even in a survey that came out, I think we just published it last week, maybe, or 2 weeks ago, was on, most people think that the news they're going to get is going to be accurate, but they think the news media are politically biased, and they think they cover up mistakes. So what is it that people mean by distrust? And if part of that is, I just think there's something political going on underneath there across the board, certainly seems to be part of it.
Also a pretty close correlation between the abolition of the fairness principle of American broadcasting and the same kind of trend. What link do you see between them? In other words, how much of this is change in the platform that delivers the news,
mm-hmm.
and how much is it deregulation?
I'm not sure. I think it would be awfully hard in some cases to separate the two, partly because I think part of what's we're all facing is this environment where so many things are changing at the same time, and they're all influencing each other. So it's political dynamics, it's deregulation, it's a whole new way of information flowing and accessing that people can't even keep up with, let alone the content providers, try to keep up with, and news publishers. So I think it's awfully hard to fully to try to evaluate them separately because I think they play off each other. And I don't know that the data we have, I don't know that I'd be confident that the data we have or that I've seen could really speak to it being more of one than the other. I certainly think that the change in the in the way people are accessing news. I mean, the way the digital environment has changed the way we function is so incredible, before social media even, that just the way we think about and process information, one doesn't even really have to think about getting the news, right? Because it comes to you. It's also not separated. When we, you know, we now have to define news in most of our surveys because we need to make sure people know what we're talking about, which, you know, you didn't used to do. So it's mixed in with everything. So the boundaries, the definitional boundaries of what is news and information, or trying to create laws around that, that's incredibly complicated.
Well, I must say, let's see it differently. It seems to me that you couldn't have the shock jocks. Could you have the shock jocks that you now have under the old regime before 1987? And could you have Fox?
Oh, well, I don't know if I know that law well enough to say. That's not my area of expertise. We have certainly had talk radio for decades and decades and decades that was extremely opinionated, that could call itself a news station. So, and in fact, in radio, one can identify themselves in the U.S. They choose if they want to be called a news or an entertainment or talk show platform, and they can change it as much as they want. So, I don't know. That's not my area of expertise. So I really couldn't speak to the law that definitively, but certainly the opinion side of news and the commentary and the political dynamics has certainly been evolving. I mean, it's certainly cable started a lot of that movement in the late 80s and 90s, but if we think about radio, it has been around. So I don't know. That I think it's a good question. If I knew the law better, I could speak a little more strongly on it. But I would say things have also escalated after that. Yeah.
Thank you for this talk. I have an inquiry regarding the platforms. It was mentioned that few people use 3 or more platforms, and 26% of people being surveyed use only one platform to get news. So how can we encourage diversity of platforms?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. It would be interesting to look at that. I don't know if I could do a double break there by age also. But what was interesting is there wasn't one platform in the UK that was really dominant, but people were choosing one, right, for the most part. I don't know that print's going to have a resurgence back. It's not shown sign of that in the last few years. Radio is certainly, I mean, listening has certainly had a new life in many ways through podcasts and other sort of streaming devices. And that, for me, that's been a really interesting kind of platform to watch, because I have found in some of our numbers, the younger people are actually more likely to say radio. In a lot of our data, including this data. So I think it goes to, you know, back to the sort of the value of getting news in from different types of voices and in different forms. We also have asked a question in the U.S. about, do you prefer listening to your news, watching your news, or reading your news? And what we have found is in the U.S. anyway, most people prefer to watch their news. And that watching still corresponds mostly to people that prefer television. And so watching, the watchers, if you will, have not yet moved to the web, whereas those who prefer to read their news, 80% prefer the web. So we've done that cross in the U.S. I've not done it here. So a part of it is also about the way you prefer to your intake, whether it's listening, reading, or watching, and that's going to be able to all be in the digital platform a little bit more easily as things continue to advance. But it's that's an interesting question. And the UK does stand apart more than other countries in its singularity.
Interesting. Thank you.
Hi, Eric Busey. I'm a fellow in the Department of Government here. I was wondering if we could go back to the slide that shows the breakouts on accuracy and fake news identification by political savvy or tech savvy and political awareness. Yeah, that one. So a couple observations, and I just wondered if you could just kind of talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
So number one, everyone seems better able to identify opinion than facts. So on the right side.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think, is question number one, that's almost the way media are evolving in the U.S. is to really educate people about opinions and strong views rather than information and hard facts. And number two, I'm kind of struck by how all the variables distinguish between ability to identify and not. And that kind of, I'm kind of surprised by that. Like, why is trust, which doesn't talk about knowledge per se, as effective as awareness or digital savvy? So.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it was interesting to see this be lower and this be higher. You sort of, you know, you try to not go in with expectations, but you'd think this would correlate more. And I think trust may have to do, and this, again, this is not in the data, so I'm just sort of thinking about what can be behind that is in some ways a thoughtfulness or a way of sort of thinking or pausing with knowledge and information as opposed to a quick response. That's just my personal thought maybe on it. And the other, on the question of opinions, yes, in general, there were more that people were able to get right on the opinion statements. Another thing could be that when your choice was 50%, people are more likely to call something an opinion in general, and so they got more of those right. Because they just called more things opinions than they called facts. So it does speak to sort of a tendency to see things as opinion and to question facts. And I think that's part of where society is questioning of facts, I mean, facts. And it's easier to put something in an opinion bucket than to put in a fact bucket and to say, I trust this is a factual statement. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you for your questions and your time. Thank you.